This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
So there's been a little criticism about the sheriff in this case, Sheriff Nanos. And turns out rightfully so. There's quite a history with Sheriff Nanos that you may want to be aware of. Because I think context is important when we see someone's actions and we play it against history of who that person is, what they've done in the past, what that may mean about how they are currently handling said situations. It's good. It's good to have context. And we're going to get into that. And I'd love to get your thoughts in the comments as we do this. Before we get into this, a note, everything we're about to go off of, we have sourced from FBI investigations, federal court filings, the Arizona Attorney General's office, county supervisors, press freedom organizations, his own deputies union, and his own mouth. We are presenting facts, publicly reported information, and commentary based on that record. All individuals discussed are presumed innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Okay. It's an opinion piece, allegedly, put that in front of everything we're about to say, okay? Let's talk about the sheriff, shall we? The man who at least initially was leading the search for Nancy Guthrie and still is kind of the front mouthpiece when he speaks, when he's not at a basketball game. The most high-profile missing persons case in this country right now has a history that most of America has never heard of, and apparently Tucson wasn't too up on it either because they voted for him. And you need to hear it, and they need to hear it, and everybody needs to hear it, because this is a man whose own deputies voted 98.8% no confidence in his leadership. A man whose jail had more inmates die than Rikers Island. Nearly 60 people dead in jail since 2017. A man whose department was the subject of an FBI investigation into $500,000 of misused funds, and whose senior department official, a person of interest in that probe, took his own life. A man accused of bearing a sexual assault of one of his own deputies. And when the Arizona Attorney General identified four specific policy violations in his department's response, he called it exactly what we expected. A man who placed his political opponents on administrative leave days before an election. He won by 481 votes and reportedly faced a criminal election interference investigation for it. A man whose deputies arrested an NPR journalist on camera while she was wearing her press credentials and carrying her recording equipment, and who admitted afterwards that he didn't even know his own department's written policy on press access. A man who, over a personal dispute, allegedly grounded the only available pilot for a $7.5 million surveillance fleet during the most critical hours of a search for Nancy Guthrie, the 84-year-old woman taken from her home. And a man who, 1 week into that search, minutes before the victim's family released a video begging her kidnappers and offering to pay, was photographed sitting courtside at a University of Arizona basketball game. Chris Nanos is his name. He is the sheriff of Pima County, Arizona. His department has gone from 1,686 employees to approximately 1,158 on his watch. And when reporters pressed him on this contradictory public statements about the Guthrie case, he said something that may be the most honest thing he's ever told the press. "I'm not used to everybody hanging on my words and then trying to hold me accountable for what I say." Yeah, you got a track record of that, buddy. Well, don't worry. This history of people not holding you accountable, that ends today, because we're about to hang onto every word, and we're going to hold you accountable for all of it. Let's start with what he did to that search, shall we? The Pima County Sheriff's Department operates a fleet of Cessna 208 Carnivus airplanes. They're designed to canvas the area, purchased in 2020 for $7.5 million, outfitted with high-resolution thermal imaging cameras specifically designed to find people in desert terrain at night. The aircraft is called Survey One, and it is arguably the single most important tool the department owns for a case like this. When Nancy Guthrie vanished from her home in the Catalina foothills, that aircraft should have been in the air within the hour. It wasn't. It sat on the ground for five. Because the pilot trained to fly, it had been reassigned to street patrol following a dispute with Nanos. The pilot appealed the decision, rather, directly to the sheriff, and Nanos reassigned him. Anyway, allegedly. A second qualified pilot had been moved out of the air unit in November of 25. So when the call came in on February 2nd, an 84-year-old woman missing, blood at the scene, possible abduction, there was nobody left to fly the one aircraft that could have made a difference. A helicopter went up immediately, but it lacked thermal imaging capability. The Cessna didn't launch until approximately 5 p.m. 5 hours after Nancy was reported missing at noon. An unnamed law enforcement source put it plainly to Fox News Digital, 3 hours in a search for a vulnerable adult is an eternity. They lost five because the sheriff stripped his own air unit of its pilots over a personal conflict. And when the moment came that demanded everything that unit was built for, there was nobody left to answer, allegedly. That's the drop point. That's where we're starting. Then there was the crime scene. Nanos released it after one day, said it was done. Investigators came back four more times, you know, like you do when you're done. Crime scene tape went up and down. A rooftop camera was missed for five full days. On day eight, drone footage captured deputies probing a septic tank behind the property. A Fox News analyst pointed out that anyone could have tampered with evidence during the gaps in the scene control. Nanos admitted he could have held off on Monday. He told NBC that Nancy had been taken from her bed by Tuesday. He was walking that back. No evidence she was taken from her bed. Just, you know, just throwing it out there. You know, the whole words matter thing. By Thursday's press conference, he had no new information. No suspects, no persons of interest. His update to the media, my guesswork is as good as yours, he told. He told the crowd. He also admitted the FBI should have been called sooner. And then came the quote that crystallized everything. After being pressed on his contradictions, Nanos told reporters, sometimes I'm speaking in generalities and I'm not used to everybody hanging on to my words and then trying to hold me accountable for what I say. I got news for you. If you're the sheriff of any place, any town, USA, your words matter, and you're going to be held accountable for them. If this is news to you, it's time to go back to your job at the closed down family video. Because if you're not used to that, well, what are you used to exactly? You're the sheriff. Leading the highest profile investigation in the department's history, telling the press out loud on camera that he is not accustomed to accountability. Well, no shit. We're about to learn all about that non-accustomedness to accountability. If this were an isolated case, a small county sheriff overwhelmed by a national spotlight, that would be one thing. And that's what I was thinking at first. And then I started digging and digging, and it's not. The Guthrie case is what happens when a decade of unchecked failure meets a case the whole country is watching. The names change. The pattern, not so much. Your thoughts in the comment section as we continue to work through this nightmare of a case. YouTube or Substack, weigh in. Links in the description. Nanos first became sheriff in 2015, appointed by the Board of Supervisors. Within months, an FBI investigation uncovered a financial scandal inside his department. His chief deputy, Chris Radke, had been running a scheme. His niece was operating cafes rent-free and without a contract inside sheriff's headquarters and the county jail. The county spent over $30,000 on equipment for them. The FBI found roughly $500,000 in misused forfeiture funds. Radke was indicted on 7 felony charges, including conspiracy to commit money laundering and theft of federal funds. Brad Gangpain, a senior department official under Nanos and an FBI person of interest in the investigation, committed suicide in 2016. Nanos himself submitted nearly $220,000 in transfer requests to the fund at the center of the probe. He was not indicted. His response at the time, perhaps mistakes were made. I'm simply a cop, not a politician. He lost re-election that November, but he came back. He won the seat again in 2020. What followed was a jail death crisis that should have ended his career. 10 people died in Pima County Jail in 2021, a per capita mortality rate more than 3 times the national average, higher than Rikers Island. The facility is so notorious, it triggered a years-long New York Times investigation. Another 10 died in 2022, 8 more in 23, 15! Since 2017, nearly 60 people dead in that facility since 2017, 60. Families of the dead organized under the name No Jail Deaths. At least 40 federal and state lawsuits have been filed since 2021. Nanos has been named personally in more than 24 of them. Despite all of it, the county renewed its contract with Nephcare, the medical provider blamed in many of those deaths. At $62.8 million, Nanos disputed the death count. He successfully pressured the county to remove a public dashboard that had been tracking post-custody deaths. When the numbers became embarrassing, the tracking just kind of ended. And then comes December 2022. A female deputy was allegedly SA'd by her sergeant, Ricardo Garcia, at a holiday party attended by several members of the department. The deputy's union later alleged that the victim's lieutenant captain and chief were aware she was being assaulted for 80 minutes and did not intervene. Garcia was arrested and fired, but when it came time for an internal investigation into how the chain of command handled the assault, Nanos put it on hold. He said it would interfere with the criminal case. The Board of Supervisors voted to request an outside investigation. Nanos' response was to pull deputies from providing security at Board of Supervisors meetings. Supervisor Shannon Bronson called it retaliation. He then reversed the decision after public backlash. The Arizona Attorney General opened a criminal investigation into Nanos' handling of the case. In August of 24, Chief Counsel Nicholas Klingerman delivered his findings. No criminal wrongdoing, but 4 specific departmental policy violations. Command staff failing to aid a fellow officer exposed to danger. An off-duty officer failing to act in an official capacity when time was of the essence. Improper documentation and reporting and failure to properly secure evidence. Supervisor Matt Hines said it publicly, failing to provide help to a deputy in danger, that's pretty concerning. Failing to act in an official capacity, failing to document staff involvement, failing to properly secure evidence. This is the freaking sheriff. Wow. Garcia was convicted of attempted SA and S abuse. Sentenced to 1 year in June of 25, more than 2.5 years after the assault. The Board of Supervisors asked the Attorney General to review the completed internal affairs investigation again after a retired deputy told the board at public comment that the command staff took their swords and stuck them in the victim's back. The IA investigation had 2 bureau chiefs investigating 2 other bureau chiefs. Nanos called the original AG findings exactly what we expected. As of this recording, the victim is still waiting for accountability. Allegedly. November 30th of 23, Elisa Resnick, a senior field correspondent for KJZZ, the local NPR affiliate, was covering a pro-Palestinian protest at the Raytheon facility at University of Arizona Satellite Campus. She was wearing a visible press pass around her neck. She was carrying her recording equipment. She identified herself to deputies as a journalist. One deputy's response captured on video, she said, "I'm a reporter." He said, "And you're under arrest." She was handcuffed and held for several hours alongside 25 protesters charged with criminal trespassing. The ACLU of Arizona called it deeply concerning and a blatant violation of their constitutional rights. The Reporters Committee for Freedom of the Press condemned it as an attempt to shut down public interest news gathering, because that's what it is. Nano stood by the arrest, because of course he did. And when the Tucson Sentinel asked him about his own department's general order providing reporters reasonable access at crime scenes, Nanos admitted he was not aware of the policy. He did not know his own department's written rules on press access or the Constitution. The Pima County attorney dropped the charges 3 weeks later, citing prosecutorial discretion. But wait, there's more. Then comes January of 24. The Pima County Deputies Organization, his own rank and file, held a vote. And guess what? 98.8% no confidence. 86 deputies voted. One supported the sheriff. One. Many more refused to participate because they feared retribution. The union statement, Sheriff Nanos and his hand-picked team of senior commanders have created a toxic culture of incompetence and retaliation. Day by day, it weakens our beloved agency. Wow. Their morale poll showed numbers near rock bottom. Nanos, I don't think it exists, and I don't know that they can't prove that it exists. He seems like a lovely individual. Just the type of person you want as sheriff, doesn't it? Then came the 2024 election. Days before voting, Nanos placed his political opponent, Lieutenant Heather Lappin, a nearly 20-year department veteran, on administrative leave. Simultaneously suspended Sergeant Aaron Cross, the deputy's union president, who had been standing on a street corner holding a sign that read, "Deputies don't want Nanos." Nanos claimed Cross violated the Hatch Act by appearing to look like a deputy while protesting. A federal judge reviewing photographs found Cross was certainly attempting to look like an on-duty deputy wearing tactical gear and denied his preliminary injunction. But the same judge also found the department's clothing policy unclear and just unclear. Ordered Nanos to clarify it within 24 hours and specifically ruled there was nothing wrong with the sign that was being held. What nobody disputed was the timing. Cross was placed on leave weeks before the election. So was Nanos' opponent. Lappin was put under a gag order, barred from discussing her case during the final stretch of the campaign she was running. The Board of Supervisors voted unanimously to request a criminal investigation into Nanos for potential election interference. Tim Steller of the Arizona Daily Star called it an authoritarian effort to hobble opponents before they can even get an election. Nanos won by 481 votes. And then came the ACLU. In 2025, they requested public records showing how often deputies contacted federal immigration officials during traffic stops. 1 week after the request was filed, the department quietly deleted the policy that required tracking those calls from its website. Also removed language banning deputies from considering race, color, or national origin when establishing reasonable suspicion. Nanos called the deletion an overcorrection. The ACLU sued for a public records violation, and despite Nanos publicly claiming his department did not cooperate with ICE, Arizona's Luminera's investigation found his deputies had turned over at least 16 undocumented people to Border Patrol between January 22 and June of 23. This is not a collection of unrelated scandals. This is one pattern repeated for a decade, and the same man has been at the center of every iteration. The Cessna pilot who had a dispute with the sheriff reassigned to patrol. The second pilot pulled from the air unit months later. The most experienced search and rescue deputy transferred out weeks before the biggest case in the department's history. The union president who criticized him suspended. His political opponent silenced under a gag order days before an election. A supervisor who demanded accountability lost her meeting security. An NPR reporter who documented police activity arrested on camera while wearing her press badge. The ACLU came asking for records, and within a week, the tracking policy disappeared from the department's website. Deputies who spoke out about morale expected retaliation and got it every single time. The person who paid the price was not Chris Nanos. It was the deputies who lost their assignments, the inmates who lost their lives, the victims who lost their investigations, the journalists who lost her freedom for several hours, the public who lost their records, and now potentially an 84-year-old woman who may have lost the most critical hours of the search that could have found her because the sheriff couldn't let go of a dispute with a pilot. The department that was once 1,686 employees now has roughly 1,158. And the man in charge says he's not used to accountability. I don't think the man understands accountability. This is the man leading the Nancy Guthrie investigation, kids. A sheriff who won re-election by 481 votes after suspending his opponent, whose own deputies voted 98.8% no confidence, whose jail killed people at a rate that made Rikers Island look manageable, whose FBI investigated department saw a senior official take his own life, whose attorney general flagged four policy violations in his handling of a deputy's SA, and more than 2.5 years later, the victim is still waiting, who arrested a journalist and didn't know his own department's rules on press access, who stripped his air unit of its pilots over a personal conflict, then watched basketball while a family begged for their mother's life. He told the press he's not used to being held accountable for what he says. He was telling the truth. He's not used to it. But the people of Pima County and the family of Nancy Guthrie deserve to know exactly who is in charge of finding her. Now they do. And so do you. Your thoughts in the comments section on YouTube and in our Substack. I love to get them. This is what happens when you don't have accountability on local levels. This is exactly what happens. Power runs rampant. And when you don't have people there holding the people in power and holding truth to power, this is what happens. I don't know the dynamics of everything, but I do know how media in our country is dying. There's a gazillion of us now, independents. But traditionally, let me tell you this. Traditionally, you used to have a local newspaper or a couple, TV stations, radio stations, reporters that would investigate these things. They would report on them. So the people knew exactly who they were voting for. Now, yes, there are still local TV stations and, you know, but they are skeletons. They are shells of what they used to be. And so many of these organizations live and die by not rocking the boat. Because you need to get information from your local authorities. And if you're exposing them for this, well, guess what news organization's not going to get the information they need to report on these other cases about? So they shut up. And they don't report on them. Or they do so in ways that don't rock the boat all that much. For an audience that's not paying attention. Whose fault is that? Is that the people that have said to the ether, we don't need reporters. We don't need anybody investigate. Everything's good. Yeah, it's not. It's not, this is why you have reporters. This is why you have investigative reporters. This is why you have people holding truth to power. And you don't just sit there blindly and go, well, they sure seem like they're going to do a good job. They're always doing the right thing. Yeah, guess what? They're not. So how an ecosystem thrives, how the ecosystem got to this level is a direct reflection of lack of accountability that the public, that Tucson is not holding their leaders to, either because they don't care or they're not paying attention or a combination of both. That's how you get people like this in power, because people still did vote for the guy, even though they knew all that shit. Or did they? Or did they? Just because the information exists out there doesn't mean people consumed it. Because one may think a reasonable person would hear all this and go, there's no way in hell I'd vote for that guy. But you don't know what you don't know, right? Until you do. And now you do too. Your thoughts in the comment section on YouTube or our Substack. HiddenKillersPod.com. Go there, or HiddenKillers.substack.com to weigh in. This guy's a dandy, isn't he? My God. All of that are the allegations against him. This is an opinion piece. Your thoughts, your opinions. We'll continue our conversation there. In the comment section. Until then, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Here's what happened when one journalist reported on DEI programs.
I decided to just focus on the University of Michigan. I obtained internal documents that showed that the school had spent about $250 million on DEI programs. I spent 2 weeks in Ann Arbor talking to everybody I could find. The unintended consequences of these programs, they had sort of left everybody dissatisfied. And this expensive machinery the school had built just imploded. If you're a journalist, you are not on anyone's team. All you're trying to do is figure out as many of the facts as you can gather. The facts are going to guide you to where the story lands. You're not taking sides. I'm Nick Confessori. I'm an investigations reporter for the New York Times.
Journalists like Nick follow the facts wherever they lead. They go where news breaks, get answers firsthand, and publish what they find. That's fact-based reporting. Seek it out if you don't already.